listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, live from sunny Santa Monica, where the sun is finally back out. We've had the weirdest weather in California. What 2 months ago, we had rain for 6 weeks solid every single day. And since then, it's been cold for us. 50s, high 50s, high 50s at night, but overcast and misty. It even rained a little bit at about 3 a.m. yesterday. So, and with fires all over the place, who knows? Let's not even go on, get on global warming. No energy for that today. So I hope everybody's had a good week. I don't have any new shows coming up anytime soon. Hopefully after today's guest, Patty. He's friggin' hilarious. And maybe he'll throw me a bone. Everything else is good. Want to thank you listeners and watching our who are watching our show as well. This is our fourth episode. Well, actually, our third. I did after we had a glitch last week. So we Sam was fine enough to run a previous program. And I want to thank Sam Hassan, my producer. Cindy Kronquist at the LA School of Comedy. Always a shout out to her, which is incidentally where I met our guest today. 10835 Santa Monica Boulevard. Go check it out. Open mics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Zach Herndon. Hey, Zach. And Sammy Junio, who originally started the show with me. And we're back in my palatial backdrop home where my hands disappear. I don't really live here, by the way. One of these days, I'm going to take this camera and turn it around so you can see what's actually here. It's pretty funny. So at any rate, without any further, what do you call it? Without wasting any more time, I'd like to introduce my friend, Patty Tunney.
Howdy, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. Pat, how are you?
You know, so far, so good. I was completely bowled over by your abode. Somewhat reluctant. You can see what the background here looks like. Rather busy, but that I was about to compliment you. Was that a baby grand piano? I was thinking, does Bob play the piano? You're a cultured individual. There are many facets.
Oh, Bob, as continental as I appear, I'm not very well traveled or cultured. But the backdrop, we did have a friend of ours on the other coast, who thought that this was really it. And he's like, man, I hope they might have gotten an invitation to come out and visit, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude.
So if he actually saw what's really behind you, that comment wouldn't have come up.
Yeah. I should turn the camera around just for shits and giggles. You know what? I think I will. Can I do that, Sam? I can do that. I won't. Because what the deal is, we have a small apartment. It's cool. And it's a nice place. The landlord painted the interior almost 2 months ago. And in that process, even when you cover up everything, so you know, we have all kinds of bohemian art on the walls and stolen freeway signs and, you know, nothing's like placed. We just go nail, 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 you know, and it's a guy spot. We call it our dingy bachelor pad. And so anyway, everything is still like centered in the room where we had the plastic over it because they're going to come back in to replace the kitchen sink and put in a new granite countertop. But so I figured, well, I don't want to put everything back and have dust settle on everything else, but they haven't come to do it. So it just looks like my college dorm room.
Yeah. Solid. I was going to say the stolen street signs kind of smell like a college dorm.
Oh, it's awesome. I'll show it to you one day. Excuse me. It's a big one from when they were redoing the 405, and it's like a 6x4, and it's orange with black letterings, and it says Sunset, Santa Monica, Wilshire, Detour.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It was actually, I'm smoking today. I know people should do. Oh, yeah, I do smoke. There's an electronics dump area. Like several blocks over is where they bring the garbage trucks at the end of the shift and parallel park them, you know, a big chained in complex. And they put the, and you can take old refrigerators and appliances and batteries and all that sort of thing that you shouldn't throw into the ground. And you can take them there. So I've been taking shit there for years. If I see a TV on the side of the street, I'll pick it up and put it in the car instead of letting it go to the, in the landfill. But that sign had been back in the corner for several years. And it had, like, every summertime, the weeds would grow over it. And you couldn't see it. And then it would come when they die. Wow. Come. And so Zach Herndon, who was my roommate years ago, much younger and spry, he literally...
I like that word, spry. Spry is an underused...
yes, just like swank.
Very spry.
Swank. Swank. He's so spry and swank. Wow. And
he... That was a magazine years ago, swank. I'm not going to delve into the content, but it was...
I love the word swank. I use it all the time.
Swanky.
That's swanky. But he climbed over an 8-foot fence with barbed wire on the top 4 times. He had to go over it once, realize he didn't have the tools to get it out, over the barbed wire again, and then over, and then bring it home. And he goes, and he walked, I walked like a mile home and nobody even noticed that I was stealing the sun. But it's like one of the best birthday gifts I've ever gotten in my life.
Well, when you think about the effort that he went
through. I'm telling you, man, it's the barbed wire part that gets me. I mean, at a time in my life, I could scale an 8-foot cyclone fence, but not anymore.
Those were the days.
I have a hard enough time getting my leg up over the curb, let alone.
Yeah. I can't get up or sit down without making a noise.
I know. It's not even funny. What I found is
your body doesn't age all at the same rate.
Nope.
Like I just turned 60. And here I'm doing okay.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you. But my neck is 73.
I thought about, now I've been, Dennis and I have been doing no carbs. So I've lost about 20 plus pounds and, the turkey neck is getting smaller, but I thought about getting rid of the beard and just growing it down the turkey neck. I thought that would be kind of a new look, you know, but you look great. Actually in the more natural light, because the only time I ever see you is in Cinda's studio, the theater, and the light's always dimmer. You look great for 60, because I'm 62. Now say something nice.
Yeah, you're looking good. A lot of it, I would like to say, is due to my very rigorous physical regimen and a very, very careful diet. But that has nothing to do with it. It's all just genetics.
I am my grandfather, who died of a heart attack at 52.
Oh.
But he was a very big man. I mean, he was more handsome than I am, I think. But in our early, late 20s, we were identical. And thus the hairy back. I have this ridiculously hairy back that comes up all the time on the Bob Dean Show. Yay. And because I've used it, sure, you'll see me at some point go shirtless in an act. I've been doing it for years.
I have witnessed, Bob Dean, I have witnessed the miracle that is your back hair.
That's right. I did show it.
I believe someone came up from the audience and started to comb your back hair, if I remember.
Well, I also want...
Wasn't there a gentleman there who had shaved your back when you first got here and taught you how to eat with a knife and fork?
No.
No, he wasn't there that night.
That was my sweet mom that would say, can you leave the table now, Robert? Because something would always go flying. From the time I was old enough to sit at the dinner table till the time I moved away from home, I never once sat at our dinner table without the first thing I would, whenever mother would make pasta of any kind, the first bite right on my shirt. And she'd put her knife and fork down and close her eyes and go put it in cold water before it sets. So I would take one bite of my rigatoni or fusilli or whatever, and I'd have to take my shirt and put it in the bathroom sink in cold water.
And your mother, it sounds to me like she was really a wonderful cook.
She was.
I thought that sounds like an Italian sports car to me. I don't even know what that is.
My mother was Serbian. My mother was Serbian, but when she was in high school, she lived in this little town in Western Pennsylvania. And her, I guess her high school boyfriend of like 2 years, 3 years before she met my father, their family owned like the only Northern Italian restaurant in this little town. So she got all of her recipes, and this woman, the woman taught her how to cook. So my mom was a hell of an Italian cook.
My mother used the Irish cookbook, which is a pamphlet. It's about this thick. It just says boil it, boil it, and then boil it some more.
Now, Patty,
left in that, Patty? Yes. Boil it somewhat more.
Tell us, boiling. You know, I'm glad that we're new friends. I enjoy what with this new rent paying job, I call it, which does not have anything to do with acting or theater. My schedule's all over the place as I'm the new guy. So I've been missing out on joining you guys at the LA School of Comedy for the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday open mics. But that's where we met, and you are really a funny guy. I enjoy when you talk about your family and stuff.
It's the only thing that saved me in this life is you.
Tell us about, Patty, tell us about you. Tell us about your family, when you came to the United States, all that good stuff, please. Where do you live?
Well, I was born in an area in the west of Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, County Mayo. You've probably heard of it. It has nothing to do with the condiment. The Irish weren't big on condiments. It's a county in the west, and we went to Belfast when I was about three for my father to get work. And Belfast at the time was the most violent city on earth.
Yes.
There were so many bombings, my mother looked forward to the gunfire. She would encourage me to go, no, it's don't be a little queer, Patty. Just go out there. And she was very progressive. She used that term queer as a blanket statement that just covered all of it. Now there's many different categories. She said, don't be a little queer. Go out there and play. It's only gunfire. Merely gunfire.
Wow, that's it. That's interesting, because I remember, because, you know, we're relatively the same age, and I remember that was in the news every single evening in the fighting in Belfast, because I had to ask my parents to sit down and explain what the hell was going on.
Well, when you, like, even now, because we moved, my father could not stand the violence. It was too much for him. He didn't want to raise his family in that type of violence. So we moved to the south side of Chicago. Which at the time was a violent city by American standards.
Right. That's why
nothing. It was absolutely nothing compared to Belfast. Good news is now, you know, America, we're number one. Way more violent than Belfast. Way more violent than
Belfast. Yeah. It's out of control.
I think in the last 24 months in Afghanistan, there were 16 deaths by gun violence. That's Thursday in Chicago.
Yep. How long did you live in Chicago?
Till I was 19.
And then you came west?
I did, as soon as I could. When we came over, my mother found out, and some of her sisters came over too, that if you let people take pictures of your children, that they would pay you. Now, let me kind of clarify this, because it sounds a little dubious. I was an underpants model by the time I was 8 or 9. If you remember catalogs,
sure,
or in the newspaper, they would have children in tidy what? Like now, if you want to see an 8-year-old in tidy whities, I'm sure you could find it on the internet. But be careful. There will be a knock at the door. But the thing was, we were all child models initially. And if you did underwear ads, you got 3 times your hourly rate.
Wow.
And it didn't damage me at all. It didn't.
Hello?
Yeah.
The
need for attention does not spring from being paraded around in my underpants for photographers. But as a result of that, my siblings, we all grew up. I had a SAG card by the time I was 10.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in lots of national commercials, and we were, my father had a sacred position in the Irish community. He was a tavern keeper, which in our culture is a very relevant thing. It's our social
home. Sure. Absolutely.
It is our therapy. It is our the way where we meet and discuss the relevant topics of today. And this was in the very early 70s. Like, when people look at me, they kind of see your kind of garden variety middle-aged white guy, and that has not worked out bad for me. But they definitely do not see an immigrant. They don't know that we come from, you know, this side of the crayon box, whether the media has trained them to look at me and not see an immigrant. But we, you know, I am an immigrant. And my father's bar was where if you came over from Ireland without papers, you would go to my father's bar and he would fix you up with a contractor to day labor.
Yeah.
Very similar to some other situations.
Now, your father's tavern was in Chicago, right?
In Chicago. My father had the Unicorn and he had the Abbey. He had a bar called the Pink Panthers. He was in the Pink Panther, he was in kind of back then. It was kind of a nightclub because you'd have a lounge in the back that would have bands on the weekend. So like my father it was a bar in the front and very typical bar that opened at 6 a.m. with a line of construction workers ready to go in who would be back at lunch. Back then, construction workers were drunk all day.
Right.
There was no, in the back, he would get bands, and like early on, he had bands like Styx. If you remember Styx,
they of were, course
he even managed them briefly, and a band called the Rotary Connection, which was famous. There was a singer called Minnie Riperton.
Oh my God, I love Minnie Riperton. She died way too young.
She used to babysit for me. She's actually Maya Rudolph's mother. Yeah, Maya Rudolph that's her mother.
And for those of you who don't know who Minnie Riperton is, in 1973, was it? The song Loving You?
Yeah, she hit the highest note ever recorded.
The highest note ever recorded. And it just makes you, if you don't stop and just listen to that song every time it comes on, there's something wrong with you.
Little bird tweeting.
And I remember my mother, she was like, I say this a lot, she was more like the character Maude on TV.
I loved Maude. I loved B. Arthur.
Of course, but my mother's characteristics were that of Maude and stature and attitude and everything. And that when that song would come on, my brother and I would be having breakfast, getting ready to leave for school, and she'd be in the kitchen or whatever, and she goes, oh, here comes that, would have got popular. She's like, here's that damn bird song again. I can't hear it. And she's always going to be grumpy in the morning.
I used to say I was born to be in comedy. My mother's uterus is where they shot the Golden Girls.
No kidding.
Yeah. That's a little known fact. It's on my bio, I
said. It's her what? Her universe?
Her uterus.
Her uterus
is where they shot the Golden Girls.
That's hilarious. I know the Marsha Posner Williams. She has been and her lovely husband, her fabulous husband, Wayne Williams.
She was one of the producers. The Atlanta serial killer. Yeah.
Well, she was one of the producers of the Golden Girls, and Wayne was the photographer. So I've got a first edition, one of the first sets from a set that he did of the four of them together. I'm just very proud of that. But your mother's uterus, I had no idea. Because we've driven by your mother's uterus. It's over here on...
It's on Pico and Robertson.
What, the house?
No, my mom's uterus.
Your mom's uterus, I was going to say.
She died in 2017, but they have her uterus preserved over.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
It's 50 cents and you can go in and look at it?
You get to go in, you can look around.
I have my hip bone.
All signed. The whole cast signed the walls. Rune Planahan, all of the above.
What did your mother do? Was she a stay-home mom or did she work?
My mother was a very ambitious, amazing woman. She bartended and was a famous bartender in Chicago. she tried to teach me how to bartend. It didn't work. I didn't have the temperament for it. But she, when people would walk in, it's like she knew them, but she many times didn't know their name. She'd go, well, that's scotch and soda, that shot.
Exactly.
She knew your drink. But she found out she could get her kids, and her sisters found out they could get their kids in modeling and commercials. And she still kept her bartending job, but that became her job, managing us. And I have a sister who's made it very big. She's a very famous actress. And the rest of us are functioning alcoholics. So the business, what's that?
Can you share, can you drop your sister's name for the audience?
Yeah, Robin Tunney. TV series called The Mentalist. She was the female lead for years and lots of motion pictures.
Great show.
Yeah, and you know, I've just run out of unemployment and I sleep on a couch I got at Big Lots. So there are varying results. The son does not always, he has a $5 million home in Beverly Hills. She actually won Best Actress at the Venice Film Festival. And I have a joint Costco membership with Dad.
Well, see, this is the reason why I wanted you on the Bob Dean Show, because now I can start pecking at you to get your sister to come on. Just kidding. I didn't know you had a sister, Robin. She was your sister. Where do you live?
I live in Brentwood. Give you an idea, just for the folks out there. Like, when I travel and do comedy, people in Los Angeles know Brentwood. Oh, that's there. But everywhere else I go in the country, I explain that's where O.J. Simpson didn't kill his wife. I live two blocks from where that didn't happen.
Well, why do you say it didn't happen? Well, do you think he's innocent?
Sometimes what I say isn't true. It's an attempt at humor. I'm just going to clue you in. It's not all true. Do I believe he did it or not? I don't know how all that blood get there. I think now we can look for a while. It was, he did it. But now, I mean, everybody can kind of agree that.
Well, that's what I tell people too, because I live about six blocks. We're pretty close neighbors because I live between Barrington and I live on Stoner Avenue by Stoner Park.
I know exactly where that's.
Yeah, I live right in the middle between Iowa and Nebraska, and it's a great neighborhood. That's why I've stayed. So that's why I tell people I live in Santa Monica when in fact it's West LA, but because how vast West LA is, it's more just for a generalization. But that's what I tell my friends in the East. I'm like, why don't you come out and visit? You can walk to where OJ killed Nicole. And they're like, that is in such bad taste. I'm like, well, you know me.
There are, when I drive by there, there are still people, they had to build a fence, who go and they put their camera up to take a picture.
Yeah. It's where the it's all tree or bush line now too. Right.
Yes. Yes. I worked with O.J. Simpson on a TV show called First and 10, which was.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
HBO in the late 80s. And it's not going to. He was charming and he was nice to the extras, mostly because he was trying to bang all the female extras. But he was, I mean, I don't know.
He's what a nice guy as nice guys, as people you work with go.
Yeah, especially nice. Bruce or Caitlin, however we refer to Bruce or Caitlin, worked on the show on occasion too and was very aloof. Was different.
Was he aloof, like shy, or was he aloof just like that? Don't look at the star's eyes or make contact with him or speak to them.
Well, you were kind of forewarned to not really make eye contact or try and engage. And, you know, I'm a guy from the south side of Chicago. This guy won all these medals. You know, that was a big deal.
Sure.
Back in the day. So I was, you know, I was very excited. But, you know, he'd come in and do his thing and leave. And do you remember Earl Holliman?
Are you kidding?
Okay.
From Policewoman.
Earl Holliman. Look, long story short, I was an Elvis impersonator for years, and I have kind of I'm a big Elvis fan. And I did an episode of a TV show called Hotel. which was.
I was just thinking of that. Sherry Belafonte. Sherry Belafonte was in that.
Yes, she was a regular. Betty Davis was a regular for a while, but he was guest starring on the episode that I was on, and the director was cool to me, and he knew I was very interested in directing and how things, and he would let me sit next to him when he shot different scenes.
Yeah, and, you were a young man then.
Oh, yeah, I was probably. But
that was very exciting.
Oh, yeah, it was very exciting. I worked as an actor a bit, then I didn't for a bit, and then I did again for a bit. It's a long story. But Earl Holliman was a guest on the show, and I don't know how much you know about Earl, but he kind of talked like Elvis, you know.
Yeah, Pep, yeah.
How you doing, Pep, you know? And he did a scene where he enters this the set, and he looks at a picture and completely breaks down and cries. And he did it in one take. And I was floored. Floored. And I remember afterwards, he was very personable. I said, Mr. Holliman, that was just amazing. That was amazing. And, you know, I kind of asked him because he did study, you know, he was like a studio, 50s New York
actor. He, I understand.
And he goes, hey, you want to go to the commissary and get a little something to eat? I had lunch with Earl Holliman and we spent the hour together. He was so wonderful. The next day, because I had the tiny little dressing room, you know, I didn't warn a great big trailer of any sort. And I brought a girl I was dating, a little Sicilian girl. And I was going to introduce her to Earl. And Earl walked by and I said, hey, Earl. And he looked at me and my girlfriend. He went, pfft, and he just kept on walking.
No kidding.
So I knew the crew. I always liked. I always got along with the crew sometimes more with some of the above the line talent. We'll put it that way. And I said, what's the deal with Earl? They said, we wanted to tell you about Earl yesterday. He didn't like seeing you with that girl. I didn't even know, you know, I found out because when I was about 19 that I was catnip out here to gay men.
Earl Holliman, who I always thought was hot.
Well, I mean, look, as guys go, I would say the man is hot. You know,
yeah.
I'm not a homosexual myself, but if young Earl Holliman went to jail, I would like to go with him.
Well, somebody had made me because you know if you, none of y'all know this, you don't know this. I'm a homosexual, but I'm the kind of queer that hates fags. So don't get me started on these nuns and Bud Light and all that crap. A friend of mine was telling me that Earl Holliman used to have these magnificent gay parties where he would sit around the piano and, you know, sing and play like super cool Hollywood parties.
Oh yeah. I was a musician. I played in a band when I first came out here and, the drummer had done what's called a casual on Rock Hudson's yacht. And my mother loved Rock Hudson.
Yeah.
Loved him. And he was going to, he went, I guess it was in Marina Del Rey somewhere. And I saw him the next day. I was like, what's Rock Hudson like? He said, you wouldn't even believe it, Betty. You know, he was just like Rock Hudson on the McMillan and Wife. But about four drinks in, he was just all over the place. Like his personality changed.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And, basically what he said, because his mother loved Rock Hudson too. And, you know, he's like, this is a man that my mother would kill to be with. And he wants me.
What are you going to do?
Just a drummer from the south side of Chicago.
Well, yeah, he was pretty, he had really flamboyant parties and things like that too. And that was so sad though, because, you know, I saw him I mean, everybody loved him. And when he did that episode of Dynasty where he kissed Linda.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big deal. And he wasn't looking as, you know, as
good. He looked terrible. And that's what I'm saying is that he looked terrible. And that's when AIDS was just starting. People were just starting to talk about it in a non-joking manner. Because I lived in Miami. I was very young and moved to Miami. And I am so glad that I didn't become a trademark whore. You know what I mean? Because I was young and good looking, but I was in the closet, you know? And I wasn't there for a brief period of time where I met a guy and we became a couple. And okay. He was older and he was very wealthy. I got some great pictures. It was a kick. There's some great stories about that. Like how I used to, every time we'd leave, some disaster would happen. And he had this gorgeous house like in Hancock Park. But the point being is that that's when I probably would have been trying to sow some wild oats.
Indeed.
People didn't realize what was going on. And we lost so many young people and old people, you know, when I say old people at the time, 30s and 40s.
That was old. Was anybody 15 years older? That's the thing. If someone's 15 years older than you, that's what you considered old.
Right. And that's why I consider myself ancient now. But yeah, it was like, I remember friends of mine going, wow, man, I'm because that grapefruit 45 pill, they used to push it on TV. Like they do all these vitamin things that'll make you lose weight.
There was a pill called the AIDS reducing plan, which was a diet pill back in like the late
70s. Yeah, the AIDS chocolates, exactly. but then people started getting really thin and they were like, I'm doing this grapefruit diet and blah, blah, blah. And then we all know how sad those things go.
Yeah. What I find interesting, and I'd be interested in your outlook on this. I was around in the 80s and I was always gay adjacent. And I was kind of like, it never mattered to me. It was never anything that because I had grown up as a child model and I was actually a fashion model. And I was exposed to a lot of gay people. It wasn't.
It's sort of like I grew up in the bar business. I've been a bartender for 43 years. So it's really the same kind of, I understand what you're saying as far as we are who we are. So
there's a certain level of disrespect, and I love young people. I love my Gen Xers and my millennials, but there's a certain lack of regard for a lot of gay people in the 80s that lost friends in droves, that died in droves. And like, I had so many people I knew died. And like, I was a pallbearer at a drag queen's funeral during the Reagan administration. Don't tell me, you know, because you get boomer references and all kinds of stuff like from the would-be woke, which here's the deal with doing stand-up. I believe you should have the ability to, funny comes first, and funny in front of any different type of crowd. There's a certain type of comedian that might work in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, LA, maybe San Francisco. His forte is making white people nervous and comforting men who wear dresses. That same act isn't going to work in Austin. It's not going to work in Kansas City, where they pay you. And you should be able to, like I recently did a club in New Orleans, and then I did another club in Baton Rouge. I couldn't do the same act both places. So,
why do you think so? In the two cities in the same state, what was the variance in attitude from the audience?
New Orleans has always been a place where anything goes.
Right.
And they're very open, but not of different ideas. You know, it's very much in line with it kind of always was more accepting. Baton Rouge is very red and mostly white folks.
Got it.
So like I would do very gentle George Bush humor and I could tell it was silence. Or if you did a Trump joke, they didn't like that. They loved it in New Orleans, but they didn't like, and I can do my act where nobody knows what my politics are. It's just the whole idea of being a comedian is to make people laugh first and foremost.
First and foremost, absolutely.
If it's just a platform for you to tell me how you feel about different things, and it's not genuinely funny, I just don't get it.
And there's so much, and I'm sorry, I'm not sorry, but there's so many comics of color who, and there are so many, that their whole thing is about cracker bashing, per se, you know? And there's this one guy around town, I can't remember his name, but it's like a Muslim name. And I do not argue his thoughts, his religion, you know, et cetera. But that's how he does his act. And he is so degrading. He talks about his family coming to this country and how some famous, they went to a Dodgers game and some famous, one of the players offered his father an autographed ball, something to that effect. And he refused it because he didn't want it from an American, that sort of thing. And they were very angry. And then he'd get to the end and the punch would be funny. But the rest of it seemed like more, it was just like a lecture, you know?
Yeah, there's a certain thing where you can build tension and then let the air out of it. But here's the rule. You can pretty much say anything you want, but it better be funny. If it's funny, almost everything is forgiven. I was, like, when I was a young comedian, I was helped greatly by a comedian named Paul Mooney, who was very famous. He wrote for Pryor, and he would have been more mainstream, but he scared white people, you know. But he was hilarious. He's one of the funniest, most intelligent comedians. And he could say things in a way, but it was always funny. So in a way, the juxtaposition, like I was at a club, and I did my act, and I have this thing called Undercover Immigrant, where I talk about the fact that I'm an immigrant, but people don't see an immigrant when they look at me. You know, they've been trained to look at me and not see an immigrant.
Like, you're a white man of privilege. They don't know you're an immigrant.
Here's the deal. So a lot of times people that look like me look at me and say just really terrible things about immigrants. The other day, I was at Fuddruckers. Can I say that?
Yeah, sure.
It was in Rancho Cucamonga, and the guy looked like me in front of me, turned around, and he looked right at me, and he said, "I didn't come here all the way from Ireland to see this great country destroyed by immigrants." I said, "Dad, Hannity's lying to you." But you know, a lot of it is, look, I will say this because it is true. My family was full of good looking guys and gals, just good looking. And there's a certain privilege to that. And certainly at the time we came here in the early 70s, they could get into places that black people that were born here couldn't. And kind of get a seat at the table. So I don't deny completely maybe the effects of a system. But then you have things now like the highest income group in the country are Indian immigrants from India. About $125,000 a year median income. Now, if you're an Appalachian, whose father, grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather fought in every war this country has ever had and live at half the national poverty rate, if both of those people applied for a small business loan, you know who would get that small business loan?
The Indian.
Yeah. So there are certain realities and other realities to where look, I think this face of mine, for whatever reason, has gotten me a pass a lot of times. I was not born on a yacht. I was not berated by my childhood butler, and my family yacht captain was not trampled to death by one of our polo ponies. None of that happened. I came from poverty in Belfast that you don't see in this country. You don't see it. And a violence level. My cousin Billy got shot in the neck by a rubber bullet when he was 11 years old. Because one of our hobbies when we were kids would be to go throw rocks at English soldiers. I didn't even know why I was throwing the rocks at them. I just was, you know, trained to go throw rocks at them. And when there were demonstrations, they would fire rubber bullets into the crowd where children were. So when people like, who is her? Meghan Markle?
Yeah.
Is that her name, Meghan Markle?
Correct.
She's got a problem, I guess, with the English royal family. They wouldn't let her see a psychiatrist. I don't know the whole story. We've been trying to cancel the royal family for 1,000 years. Get in line. Get behind us. We're first. You know, there's a little history we have with them. But, you know, we think of the royal family as these quaint little, look, racist. They're bloodists is what they are. That they don't really, a lot of the problem with Prince Charles marrying Princess Di was she was only a 16th cousin. That wasn't close enough. You know, the Queen and Philip were third cousins.
Really?
Yeah. They're the original gangsters, all those royal families. Anybody that has a, like, lord or lady, they did some terrible stuff on behalf of the royal family.
And they're all interbred.
Oh, yeah. There was a Charles III of Spain had what was called the Habsburg chin. And he was just violent, always ill, not very smart. And the man that gave his daughter to him to be married said he was so ugly as to inspire fear. Who gives his daughter, wow. What type of a father gives his daughter to a man so ugly that it inspires fear? A father who's also an uncle and a cousin.
That's fucked up.
They used to marry siblings, but they were a little too close. And so they started, you know, they went out to cousins. And I say that, but I did the DNA, the 23andMe.
23andMe, yeah.
Yeah. I'm 100% Irish. All my DNA comes from 180 square mile area in the west of Ireland.
No kidding.
My family tree looks like a stump. We're inbred. We're from the shallow end of the above ground gene pool. There was a lot of cousin fucking.
Well, I grew up in the South, and not me, but there was a lot of cousin fucking going on then there too. So,
well, you know, it depends on how if you have good looking cousins. Like, if you're not cousin fucking, maybe you're the ugly cousin.
Exactly. I guess I'm the ugly one. You know, off the subject for a minute, I wanted to ask you, do you ever are a fan of the is it on HBO, Dairy Girls?
Oh, yes. Dairy Girls. I love the fact that they have subtitles.
Yeah. I think it's a hilarious program.
Yeah. My grandmother's lineage goes back to dairy.
Which means what?
Well,
the dairy, is it? I just thought it was a region or whatever.
Yeah, Derry is an area in the north of Ireland that they used. We call it Derry. Officially, it's called Londonderry. And a Derry girl is just a girl from Derry.
They right.
A specific flavor to them, you know, like a South
That's Chicago. That's a great funny show.
Yeah. Yeah. Go see Frank of Ireland. That's a very funny show. Moon. There's a lot of funny Irish programming. Yeah. If you go to Ireland, I actually did stand up in Belfast in 2019 and in Dublin. Any Irish bus tour guide is funnier than 90% of the stand-up comics here. funny people. You know, the Irish, we're not fond of each other. And we're polite, but we don't really mean it. It's all sarcasm. All of it is sarcasm. And, you know, we don't like braggarts. You know, stop talking bullshit.
Can you tell the audience about your daughter that left you the note?
Well, yeah. I have a daughter who calls me by my first name. She, you know, obviously probably not the favorite, you know. And
how old is she?
She's 31 now. She still lives in my house, but she left me a note. I might have the note here, but it was basically, "Dear Dad, please don't take this the wrong way, but you are a clueless idiot who knows nothing of me or the independent woman I've become. You are privileged, you lack understanding, and you need to recognize my need to be myself. Love, Alexa. P.S. Please tell the maid to pick up more vegan crab cakes and paint the instructor on time this month."
Sorry, Alexis. And that's probably the exact look you had on your face.
Yeah, well, there's a point where you just kind of go, like, my father taught me the best way to react if your wife is kind of just going on, or a daughter is just going on. That dynamic is more complex than something with my son. It's very basic, but there's way more levels. And that's just to kind of look in and nod, point your palm skyward and just go. Because if you say something, it's going to be wrong.
Yeah.
It's going to be wrong. So just.
And it's just going to make fuel get in the fire.
Yeah. She, we were walking. I go to a church, St. Sebastian Church, on a Sunday. And as we're walking out of the church, there's a woman of our vintage, Bob. And she's got a church dress on. And I could tell she was enjoying it. So I leaned over and I said, "You know, that's really a beautiful dress. It really suits you." And she said, "Oh, thank you. Thank you so much." I look over at my daughter. She's giving me a mean stare. She said, "Dad,
big guy.
It's 2023. You can't just talk to women you don't know. That is a microaggression."
It's absurd.
How exactly do you think you got here? I sent your mother smoke signals? Did you have an arranged marriage? No, I had to approach a woman I had no history with at some point in my life and make noises from a hole in my face.
Exactly.
That's how we did it. Remember?
Sending smoke signals. It's like I was that T-shirt that women wear that says, my eyes are up here, fellas. Well, I'm not trying to look at her boobs. I'm trying to read what it says. So, when you know, I want to see what's on the T-shirt. And then they think you're checking them out, and they give you this attitude, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, don't flatter yourself. My father was an international traveler in the 50s and 60s and into the early 70s. He traveled all over the world. And my father was a very handsome man. And my sister, Laurie, and my father, my late father, whose name was Robert as well, we were sitting in the Nashville, Tennessee airport seeing my sister off back to Key West. And we're having drinks, and the waitress brings around drinks, and my father goes, "Oh, thank you, hon," like that. And the waitress literally just stood there. She took like 3 beats staring at him, and she's looking, my dad's looking at her like, as if, "Did you forget something?" And she turns around in a huff and walks away. And my dad goes, "What was that all about?" And my sister goes, "Daddy," she goes, "you can't speak to women, you know, you can't speak to women, or especially women in the service industry like that. It's very demeaning." And my father was mortified. He was sincerely mortified. He's like, I had no idea. I had no idea. He said, back in my day, that was about the highest form of flattery you could give to a cocktail waitress. And yeah. And he goes, wow. And so we went on with our conversation, and then she comes back with the check, and my dad like reaches out like this to take the book, and he goes, thanks, Toots. And the girl just had a fit. She just stormed away. But then he was like, oh, shit, like I did it again. You know?
A man of his vintage, even our vintage, that's the way that we thought. It doesn't come from a malicious place. Like no, the
it
whole
comes
thing
from a gentlemanly place.
Yeah, that's a good. But like being misgendered now, I was misgendered. I've been misgendered many times because I was a very pretty child, and my mom liked me to wear my hair a little long, you know, a little longer. And many times you go, "Oh, what a pretty girl! What a pretty little girl!" Which I'm like, I'm not a girl. It didn't help that I was in the ladies' restroom with my mother because she would not allow me to use a public men's room until I was old enough to vote.
Hey, Patty, I've just been informed that this show flies by. Can you tell us any upcoming shows or anything you'd like to promote with us?
Yes. First of all, I do a show every Wednesday at the Mix in Pasadena. That's a stand-up comedy show. I do one show a month there. I produce the show. I appear there. So we'll have you out there, Bob.
I would love that, Patty. Please. Thank you.
The Saturday show is a variety show. So I have music. I had a midget juggling chainsaws. Can I say chainsaws on this?
Oh, that's so retarded.
Well, we may both be canceled. This may be the end of our careers. As
you know it. The letters are going to start. Things are going to start pouring in.
I'm appearing at Oino Voino. I'm not saying it correctly, which is in Silver Lake on Friday. That show starts at 7. It's on Glendale Boulevard in the Atwater Village area. And I am the only, this is the term that I was told to use, non-menstruator in the Saturday a celebration of menstruation show. So when I tell you I work every crowd I can,
I hope it's not a bloody mess.
What's that?
I hope it's not a bloody mess.
We
have to wrap this up, Patty. I want to say thank you. And I hope that you'll come back and join us again.
I'd love to.
Send me a headshot so I can put it on our social media to promote this episode. But yeah, my best to your family, your lovely.
Listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.